The modern concept of special operations grew out of World War II through the Korean and Vietnam conflicts and was solidified in the minds of both generals and citizens during what started as the Global War on Terror. Two forces travel through history, changing the face of war as a double helix. As one changes to face the current social and political and military climate, the other adjusts, creating a cyclical wave between the two. As nation states become more powerful and through technology, and as the long arm of their reach stretches further across the globe, so the methods of fighting shift and change to find new chinks in the armor. The latest violence in the Levant, between forces with shifting identities and motives, depending on who you ask, illuminates one of those shifts in the way that we are taught, or in the ways that wars are fought in a time after the Geneva Convention, the nuclear bomb, and the insurgent. Asymmetrical warfare was once the buzzword of military leadership and strategists attempting to wrestle with the ways that one half of the double helix responded to the other's expanse and capability. The insurgent, along with both the terrorist and the guerrilla, appear as one side of an unequal equation, where a professional soldier, a government, and the idea of rules of engagement stand opposite. This asymmetry between an officially recognized standing army and an opponent who takes great efforts to deny recognition or identification, except when it's politically expedient, not only describes the conflict between Israel and Hamas, but it also shows what it's like when a regular force meets an irregular object. Like a stream of water crashing over a jagged stone, the splash tends to be both messy and spectacular. Add enough force, and no one comes out dry. From the warfighter's perspective, the difference between regular and irregular often comes down to appearance. The regular wears a uniform, is typically issued his weapon, and falls under a rank structure. The irregular may not wear any uniform at all, and often brings his own tools to the fight, and fights in a way that contrasts the official armies of the day. During the actions of the American frontier, or during the days of the American frontier, the term ranging, where we get our term, our modern ranger, identified the actions of a person or group who stood in that gray area between citizen and soldier. Although they were paid by the crown or the government, whether via wage or exchange for scalps, they would range through the countryside, destroying targets of opportunity and what would extirpate their enemy. They would travel deep into the frontier territory in order to destroy the villages or food supplies of their opposition using ambushes, raids, and other predecessors of our modern small unit tactics. But from the public's perspective, an irregular oftentimes earns the retinue of wicked titles, from mere terrorist to war criminal, to bandit to mobster, where the regular is noble, honorable, disciplined, and the irregular fights and flees like a coward, attacking non-combatants and infrastructure to cripple their opponent's force and demoralize their enemy. Or, in contrast, where the regular is the symbol and the sword of a tyrannical empire, the irregular himself fights on behalf of freedom, voluntarily, I might add, forced to use hit-and-run tactics against a greater force. It is here where we see the muddiest of culture differences come to full force. One man's hero is another man's villain. And if this were an article or a presentation on discerning the moral differences between these two entwined types of war, we would find ourselves in much deeper waters, requiring pages and pages of ethics arguments, and instead, the conflict in Israel should serve as an opportunity to better understand the DNA of war. On the side of Israel, we have a military that is not only bound by the rules of their own administration, which has placed over the individual soldier, but they also receive judgments as a nation state. From the warfighter to the country's response to an attack, they are expected to play within a certain set of rules and hold their own people accountable who breach that code of ethics. Target discrimination is the daily responsibility of the individual and the standard hung over the entire country. These expectations of a standing military that is recognized by NATO, the United Nations, and the average Western viewer, whether they recognize it or not. Even when engaging in unconventional warfare, Israel is held to a standard that is germane or that pertains to conventional warfare. Or they are held to standards that pertain to conventional warfare. In the world's eyes, if an Israeli soldier commits a war, the nation of Israel as a whole is held responsible as an accomplice. Hamas, on the other hand, does not carry such burdens. Whether operating in a cell format where individual nodes can be destroyed or infiltrated without compromising the whole, or receiving some more centralized form of funding and leadership by a known enemy of Israel, the actions of a group or one of its parts are never applied to the whole. A Hamas irregular can commit atrocities without spreading blood to the hands of his handlers, housekeeper, or husband. By residing in the gray area between an officially recognized government and a terrorist group, they dodge the international courts while running sometimes literal underground routes to influence funding and violence. We've seen this same dynamic take place on American soil. The organization that calls itself Antifa, despite having a founding mythology, localized chapters, and distinct branding, operates in a way that an irregular would if engaging in low-level political violence. In response, the Proud Boys quickly swelled in both numbers and as a public enemy number one in the eyes of the media. While there were no clearly defined or publicly represented leader of Antifa, the Proud Boys' top brass soon found themselves the target of both political and legal battles. While Antifa continues to use the tactics of an irregular to evade persecution, at the time of writing, very little appears to remain of the Proud Boys. One might be tempted to replace the word regular with recognized by these examples. So long as a group evades recognition by this or that authority, they are able to operate as an irregular. But once a force seeks legitimacy amongst those they consider their peers, they will be expected to follow the decorum of regular warfare. Both the early American forces during and after the revolution and the Taliban in recent history have followed this pattern. Once the force establishes control over an area of independence, they find themselves on a path towards legitimization. If a regular force engages in irregular warfare, it is often condemned as a war crime. If an irregular attempts to engage in regular warfare at the wrong time, they are typically wiped from the face of the earth. While many may argue back and forth over what has taken place in Israel and the Palestinians, we may be beset with a heavy moral question that one will require us to search to the very core of our moral foundations to answer. While we are doing this, we may also gain vital information, we may glean vital information to the rules of war, be it the true war of Karl von Clausewitz's ideal or the real war of how an asymmetrical fight between a regular and an irregular can force two different paths to victory. Special operations rose into prominence in an era when regular war became too costly with the advent of nuclear weapons. And so irregular forms of warfare spread once again across the world. In a way, special operations combines the strengths and weaknesses of both sides of the double helix that is the DNA of war. It takes the tactics, techniques, and organization style of the irregular and places him under the infrastructure, logistics, strategy, and public image of the regular army. Whether as soldiers, citizens, police officers, or persons who daily carry a firearm, we find ourselves at the end of this understanding, once again considering what it means to be a good man in times where evil presents us with so many tempting excuses. As it stands, it is not the form alone which determines the morality of the one who wages war. If you have enjoyed this written article, I decided to turn it into a podcast for you. You can support the Redacted Culture Cast over at redactedculture.locals.com, or you can support us or pick up some of our merch and goodies at redactedllc.com. This endeavor, this podcast, and this company is a project in presenting intellectual tools to this community and culture as the face of warfare changes from the regular back to its original starting point, the irregular. And so as we look at and are engaging in a world where insurgents and spies exist amongst our midst, we find it all the more necessary to become capable of and considerate of that which separates the sheep from the goats. And so if you want to be a part of the group, if you want to jump into our conversations or get involved or get first advance on events that we are putting on or have some access to some exclusive items, you can go over to redactedculture.llc, you can join us on the Locals channel, which is redactedculture.locals.com. That being the case, I am your host, and I have enjoyed this conversation with you. Go forth and conquer. I'm not the one who's always right.